take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. Start the hour, as we like to do, with a few headlines. An ESPN study of over 1,000 sports fans. It's called the ESPN Coronavirus Lockdown Fan Study. Surveyed fans ages 18 and older, 65% in favor of sports returning even if fans can't be in the stands. The approval number grew to 76% when participants were asked if they support the return of sports without fans in the stands if the players were kept in hotels and their contact with others was closely monitored. So, surprising breaking news. Sports fans surveyed want sports to come back. Also, we've got some new news in the NCAA world. Louisville has been hit with a notice of allegations from the NCAA on Monday, including one level one allegation involving improper recruiting offers for former signee Brian Bowen II, and three level two allegations, including one against former coach Rick Pitino. So the NCAA alleges that Pitino, who has now been hired as Iona's coach in March, did not satisfy his head coach responsibility when he failed to promote an atmosphere of compliance. So, notice of allegations from the NCAA sent to Louisville's men's basketball team. We'll see how that plays forward as we continue to keep all eyes on it. And then, in some sad news, the Dolphins it's a sad day for Dolphins fans everywhere, as head coach, former head coach, Hall of Fame head coach Don Shula has passed at the age of 90. The NFL's winningest head coach led the Miami Dolphins to the league's only undefeated season. He passed away on Monday. So obviously the Dolphins fan base is saddened today. The Dolphins issued a statement saying that Shula died, quote, peacefully at his home. We'll continue to break that down, obviously, and give you some context around legacy as we move forward on First Take Your Take. And it's at least spurned the conversation for us. We want you to tell us, what's the greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport? The Dolphins went undefeated. Is that on your list? We've seen a lot of The Last Dance lately. Are one of those seasons on your list? 888-SAY-ESPN. 888-729-3776. That's how you get in on the conversation. 888-729-3776. Don't forget, SSI recipients, if you did not file a tax return last year and have children under 17, this is important, you must act now to get the $500 economic impact payment per child. If you do not act by May 5th, that's tomorrow. If you do not act by May 5th, you must wait until next year to get those payments. You got to go to irs.gov and enter your information in the non-filer tool by May 5th. That's irs.gov. This message is produced by Social Security at U.S. taxpayer expense. Want to make sure you get out there and get that money, guys. First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, asking you the single greatest season you've ever seen in any sport. We'll get some of your take coming up in just a second. There was a lot of take from The Last Dance last night, as obviously Michael Jordan has had his share of instances that create polarizing opinions. One has been the way he approached or didn't approach any sort of opportunity for activism or any sort of opportunity to use his platform for a voice outside of basketball. It was part of the conversation around The Last Dance, his famous quote of Republicans buy shoes also. It was part of his lack of activism was part of the context we got over the last couple of episodes. Stephen A. today on First Take talked about whether his lack of a political stance should affect the way we see his legacy.
I don't think it should affect it at all. I mean, first of all, we don't know what he was doing behind the scenes. As a matter of fact, on countless occasions, we've heard how charitable and philanthropic he has been, particularly with his dollars. He wasn't one that wanted to go out front and center and speak on a plethora of issues, and he's remained true to that to this day, not just politically, but beyond. Think about The Last Dance that we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks. Jordan's done one interview, one. And that was Good Morning. That was with Good Morning America. That's it. And he was probably contracted to do that in order to promote The Last Dance docuseries. That's Michael Jordan. He talks rarely, if ever. He doesn't like to do that. He's never been comfortable doing so. And the bubble that he was in, as we saw during episodes 5 and 6 yesterday, it got to him so significantly so that contributed in large part to his willingness to walk away from the game for a couple of years, or nearly a couple of years. Now, to get into the Harvey Gantt situation, as a black man, let me be very, very clear. We didn't like that. I'm not speaking for all African Americans, but a vast majority of folks from the African American community didn't like his lack of a political stance at all. To a lot of African Americans throughout this nation, Jesse Helms represented something very different to us. We found him to be a reprehensible individual in terms of the policies that he promoted and he wanted to insert and implement into our government. We didn't like him a little bit. And as a result, when you look at the Democratic nominee for the Senate, that was Harvey Gantt, considering that Michael Jordan was raised in North Carolina, that he started at the University of North Carolina, there were a lot of people that wanted him and desperately wanted and expected him to say something. And his reluctance to do so certainly was a turn off. We were turned off until we saw him play. And then when we saw him play, we got the hell over it. Not to mention the fact it wasn't like he endorsed Jesse Helms. He just didn't want to get involved. He didn't want to speak and come out and endorse somebody. I think the thing that hurt Michael Jordan most when it came to Harvey Gantt was his willingness later on to endorse Bill Bradley, if I remember correctly, because people were saying, wait a minute, it's one thing not to get involved at all, but it's another thing entirely to choose not to get involved with Harvey Gantt, but to get involved with Bill Bradley. It turned a lot of folks off. But Michael Jordan, his mystique and everything that came with it, obviously carried a lot of cachet. We have to remember that it was 1990 before he was a champion. He was 27 years of age. His average salary for the first 11 years of his career was only $4 million, even though he collected a lot more off the court. They were endorsements. And even though there was no Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or anything else, at that particular moment in time, it was still a time, Greeny, and you can piggyback off of this if you want to, along with you, Max. There was a time, even though that wasn't the time of social media, during that time, if you said one word wrong, if you said one sentence wrong, particularly if you were Michael Jordan, it would resonate so profoundly that it would compromise everything that you were trying to build. Considering the doors, his cachet, his excellence opened up for so many people to follow. Also piggybacking off of the Isaiah Thomases of the world and others, even though those wasn't political issues, they were just basketball, how a word or a sentence literally ravaged their careers in the minds of the public. You had a lot of people like Michael Jordan that just said, you know what? This ain't worth it. This is not my lane. I'm not into politics. I'm into this. And that's just the way it went.
When Michael Jordan, when you saw last night in the episode on The Last Dance where Michael Jordan says, hey, I said Republicans buy sneakers to ingest on a bus to my teammates, so there's nothing to apologize for. Okay, you can take that as a joke. In other words, hey, I don't want to get involved because I have business interests. And he was saying that kind of out of the side of his mouth, kind of, you know, tongue in cheek. Making fun of, there's maybe a little truth under it because people have business, but that's not really the reason. Let's assume on the surface that that's true. Let's take him at his word, Jordan at his word, that that's not really the reason that he didn't endorse Harvey Gantt, who was Jesse Helms' opponent. Let's say the real reason is, because what I took from the conversation he had with his mother, as it was reported on the docuseries, is that he doesn't want to vouch for someone who he doesn't really know. He doesn't want to vouch for something he doesn't really know about, because there's a difference between supporting an idea or being against an idea and support and giving your endorsement to a person who you don't know about.
First, take your take on ESPN News. This is an interesting and complicated part of the Michael Jordan conversation, because certainly there are athletes that choose to use their platform for something bigger. There are musicians, there are entertainers that choose to use their platform and what they've accomplished as a launching spot for them to be able to speak on other things that matter to them. And I certainly support that, because frankly, anybody that wants to use their platform however they choose to should be able to. In order to have that, though, however they choose to is an important part of this. That means, should someone choose not to want to use their platform, that's okay, too. You know, one of the things that I think is surprising is we always look at athletes particularly saying it's that person's job to be a role model. It's that person's job to speak out. But we don't hold everybody to that same standard. We don't look at Metallica and Guns N' Roses and say, what are their thoughts on these big social issues? We never look back, and we don't look at boy bands asking them to run an entire mindset for a nation. We don't look at actors. You know, nobody was looking at Macaulay Culkin saying, well, what's he feel about big social issues? And I use many of these examples because they involve kids that have become rich and then as a result famous. And it's awesome. If you want to be Taylor Swift and you want to become rich and famous as you grow up and then use that platform, cool. Good on you. If you have things that are important to you. But if you don't, that's okay too. I mean, Michael Jordan, in theory, as a kid, wasn't sitting around in the driveway shooting hoops saying, man, I hope someday I can shoot to the point that I can have a platform where I can use it for betterment of society. But we asked for him to take that obligation because he reaches a certain level of fame and status. If somebody chooses to not be informed on issues, if it's not important to somebody in their life, I think it's more important that they don't speak out than they do. What we don't want are people that are misinformed coming out and suddenly misinforming all of their followers. I've said it for a long time. When I go to a concert, what I want is escapism. Now, there are certain acts that I've gone to see musically that believe in more than that. And I'll sit through whatever their message is because I want to listen to the music. That's fine. But if an act chooses not to do any of that, just wants to come out and give you a couple of hours where you're not thinking about anything other than the music you're singing along with, I'm great with that. And I see no difference between that and the NBA. If LeBron James chooses to use his platform for something bigger than basketball, that's spectacular, and he should be absolutely commended for it. Any athlete that wants to use their platform for the betterment of the world should be praised for it. But just because we're praising an athlete that does that on the one hand doesn't mean that we should fault an athlete on the other hand for not being passionate about those very same things. I have a microphone. I sit in front of a microphone every single day. And I've worked with people in the past in my career that want to use the microphone to educate, help, to try and spread things that they're passionate about to try and make the world a better place. I think that's great. I personally believe that the best way I can help make the world a better place is by giving everybody escapism and the opportunity to not think about some of those. I believe that if you want to get context and mindset on big social issues, for example, you're probably not listening to me on ESPN Radio to get those. You know, and just because somebody wants to use their mic for more versus somebody that doesn't mean either side is right or wrong. At some point, we've put this pressure of running society to our athletes. Like it's their job to raise the next generation. Like it's their job to do something more than just be great. You know what it's their job to do? To go out and do their job, actual playing the sport that they play. The example that they can set is being ferociously competitive and caring about doing your best every single time you step on the floor. Those are great lessons that can be taught simply by the actions that you do. But to ask anybody, an athlete or an entertainer or a sports talk radio host, to come in and be something more than that is at least disingenuous because not everybody is passionate about the same things. It's not Michael Jordan's job to raise anybody's children. It's Michael Jordan's job to go out and be a great basketball player. And it's every parent's job to sit down and try and give context to that to the children that they have. You can tune into The Last Dance, a behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Bulls dynasty. The series continued Sunday. It continues this Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby immediately following the broadcast. Even if you thought you knew everything in the broadcast, Jalen and Jacoby bring you even more mindset on it. It's incredible. It's presented by State Farm and AT&T, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. We'll get a little bit of Magic's take on Michael, but first I want some of your take. In honor of all of the Last Dance conversation and Don Shula, we're asking you, what's the greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport? Ivan in Pennsylvania, what do you got as the greatest single season you've ever seen?
Hey, what's up, Jay Fitz? Big fan of the show. I always listen on my mail route. I got to go with the boys from UConn in 2011, man. They made that they made that crazy run at the end of the season after starting off a big underdog. They climbed up to fourth in the nation. Then they were, I think, like 18-2 or something like that. Lost like five of the last six games, dropped in the Big East Conference, and they had to rip off like five games in a row in the Big East, and that's when it was super powerful. And then on top of that, then just won, what, six more games to claim the title against Butler. That had to be one of the greatest runs ever.
Yeah, no, you know what? I love that take because it was such an up-and-down season. So you're right. It was such a we've got it, we don't have it for the entire fan base. It's a really good one. I love the call on it. And you mentioned the mail route, man. Thanks. We say this all the time on the show. I'll continue to say it. For everybody that's out there driving trucks or delivering mail or putting themselves at risk right now, really appreciate what you guys do and for keeping us all going. John in Tennessee. John, what do you got? What's your take on the greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport?
Hey, Kit. The greatest single season in sports, I think, is Tiger Woods 2000
2000 PGA season. The guy won 9 times. He won 3 majors. If he only played that year, he would qualify for the World Golf Hall of Fame. In 20 tournaments, he finished in the top 10, 17 out of 20 of them. And I think that his scoring average that year of like right around 68 is still the all-time record.
Well, not that, you know what you're talking about, peak Tiger, you're talking about peak dominance, you're talking about, you know, just a level of something we've never seen before and likely never will see again. So, you know, absolutely, that's a great, great call on it. And also a great call because not only was it great in dominance, it was great in perspective, perception. Everybody wanted to watch that season. Everybody gravitated to it. So I love that concept on it. Keep yours coming, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Want to get you a little bit more concept on Michael Jordan and the Last Dance. As Magic Johnson joined, he joined First Take today to talk about Jordan's life off the court and, frankly, when MJ took over the league. Check out Magic today on First Take.
Well, I don't think I was surprised. I think, you know, Michael needed a place that he could just go be Michael Jordan and not Air Jordan. And I think a lot of time, you know, he enjoyed how he performed on the basketball court. I mean, the greatest ever. And then you think about he didn't ever have time just for himself, just to be one of the guys. You know, he couldn't just go to a restaurant. He couldn't just go to hang out at a bar or a club or something, you know, because it was always going to be a big deal for him. That's why I think he loved golf so much, because he knew that people couldn't get to him. That's a place he could relax and he could be with his friends and just hang out and just be one of the guys, you know. And Michael, because he gave so much of himself to the game of basketball, he loved his family. As you can see, he loved his parents. They were, I mean, his father was close with them. Had a close relationship, I should say, excuse me, as well as his mother. And then, you know, he's great father to his kids. And so it doesn't surprise me. It didn't surprise me what he said on air. I know when we're playing cards, he's in his element. He get to talk trash. He get to have fun. And we had a lot of fun during Olympic times just playing spades or bidwiz or Tunk. We played a lot of card games, and you know he had to bet a lot of money, but we had fun doing it.
Magic, I want to talk about the Dream Team and that scrimmage that you guys had that's become legendary, and it was covered in other documentaries as well, but not as thoroughly as this. I'm curious to how you were feeling at the time, because it was your and Larry Bird's league. You know, the Bird had gotten hurt. But it's hard to imagine someone being better than Bird or talking more trash than Larry Bird. And then this kid, Michael Jordan, comes around and he's even better and talks even worse than Bird. But at the same time, it's being taken away from you in a way, because it was your and Larry's league. And now Michael's coming to take it by force. And that scrimmage seemed to represent that moment in time where there was no doubt. What were you feeling at that time?
Well, Max, I think, first of all, the scrimmage was the greatest basketball that we all had ever played in, because of the fact that every player on the team was a Hall of Famer, an all-star in their own right. And also we had big egos. So we were playing for our ego. We were playing to let guys know that, hey, I'm the best at what I do, and I'm going to go head-to-head against you. So it was amazing to see Charles Barkley go at his friend Karl Malone, and Karl Malone go at Charles. Patrick Ewing against David Robinson. I mean, on and on and on. It made it so amazing. And Chuck Daly was the perfect coach for it. And Max, it was really funny. So we got out on them about 10, 12 points, you know. And so, you know, I had to make Michael go to the Air Jordan level. So I said, okay, I'm going to go over here and talk a little trash to him and see what's going to happen, right? And this is when the torch got passed. So I said, look, MJ, if you don't turn into Air Jordan, we're going to blow you guys out. Max, I've never seen a man take something so personal and then go out there and just take that scrimmage over. it was amazing to see him come out and just dominate. And I'm talking about dominate the best in the game. And that's when we knew that the torch was being passed from myself and Larry onto Michael. But I'm going to tell you the moment that really got us. So we got back to the hotel, right? And so we're all, the NBA had built a nice lounge for the players. And so Michael's up there and he's smoking on his cigar. Larry and I just sitting there having a Coke or whatever. And he says, guys, and he put his hands on my shoulder, put his hands on Larry's shoulder and said, guys, there's a new sheriff in town. So he was like, oh, man, what could we say? He said, you know what? You're right. It's your lead now.
First Take, Your Take on ESPN News. That's our weekly Last Dance recap brought to you by AT&T. Tune in to the Last Dance behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Bulls dynasty. The series continues this Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Then listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby immediately following the broadcast presented by State Farm and AT&T, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. We're going to get more Your Take, the greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Starting to get a lot of college football votes in there. So we'll get some of Your Take coming up. Plus, we heard from Todd Archer on the Cowboys signing Andy Dalton earlier on this show. Well, you'll hear from First Take next. What did they think of the signing? You'll hear what First Take had to say about it. First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. Been telling you about it. Don't forget the All In Challenge fundraising initiative continues to offer incredible sports experiences that you can bid on or enter to win. And it all supports organizations providing food to those in need, particularly kids, the elderly, and frontline workers. They got a huge number of enter to win opportunities that close soon. That includes a private skating lesson for you and a guest with Tony Hawk. That closes tonight. There's an ultimate ESPN experience that lets a winner spend a morning with College Game Day on a football Saturday and spend another day with the SportsCenter crew of their choice. That closes tomorrow. I can tell you, you guys, I had the chance to tour with Game Day all last fall, and going out with those guys and just seeing the way it happens and being on those college campuses, it's one of the most special experiences you can possibly have. And closing on Wednesday, really cool NHL Winter Classic experience for you and 9 friends. You get to go behind the scenes, meet some of the players, and watch the game from a suite. Remember, 100% of the money, all of it, 100% of the money raised benefits organizations providing food to those in need. If you want to participate, go out to allinchallenge.com. That's where you can find it. Remember, there's some auction items out there with the bid numbers that are crazy. Enter to win is just like a raffle. 10 tickets, 10 bucks. You can get that opportunity and you're helping great organizations. You want to learn more about it or you want to know how these organizations help, you want to bid on it, get out there, do it at allinchallenge.com. That's allinchallenge.com. Go out there, make a difference. The Cowboys went all in on Andy Dalton. So that's going to raise some questions, obviously, as we try and figure out how it's possible they've signed a quarterback not named Dak, right? So everybody feels like this is some sort of a statement about Dak. And Dez Bryant has made it clear that he thinks that it's crazy at this point. All these other deals are being done and that nothing's been done on Dak yet. Marcus Spears joined First Take to talk about Andy Dalton, the business move, and how he sees it.
From a business standpoint, this is great for the Dallas Cowboys. It's the right decision. The one that you can make and immediately have a starter come in case the Dak situation doesn't work out. But that's where it gets personal. And that is the part that we have to talk about, as well as the side of business. The personal part is the fact that we've talked about, Stephen A., you, everybody in media has talked about what Dak has been for the Dallas Cowboys. And what Dak is learning, and what people continue to learn about sports, is that when it really gets down to business time, it's business. We have very few cases of contracts being personal, of contracts being of good rapport. And I think that's where Stephen A. is when you talk about Tony Romo already being paid. Yeah, it's cool. We can think that Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones and the Cowboys organization have an affinity for Dak. But I would challenge anybody to say that that infinity is stronger than the one that they had for Tony Romo. I was there in the locker room. I knew what that relationship was between Jerry Jones, Jason Garrett, Stephen Jones, the Jones family, and Tony Romo and Jason Witten. That was a different evolution of what that relationship was with those guys. So I don't know if that personal side is fully and completely there with that. Here's the issue that I have with it. The issue that I have with it is that since 2016, do you know Mark Sanchez and Geno Smith has made more money than Dak Prescott? And Dak Prescott has been a starter and has had a tremendous amount of success for a guy in his first 4 years as a starting quarterback. What's up? What's up, Max?
Those guys were drafted in the first round. High up in the first round. This dude was drafted in the fourth round, 100%. And that's how this goes.
Let's first take your take on ESPN News. Look, Andy Dalton signing with the Cowboys has a couple of things to say about the Cowboys, but nothing about Dak. This is all about, you know, you're protecting yourself. This is a Cowboys team that is all in on winning right now. This is a roster top to bottom that is one of, if not the best rosters in the NFL. And I said it with Will Cain last week. I think that the Cowboys should be in more conversations as Super Bowl contenders. I understand that they've had their issues with not living up to the talent in the past. But if we believe, as many do, that that's a coaching issue, then they've in theory brought in a coach that's going to be able to maximize that, Mike McCarthy. So they get themselves a great backup quarterback situation so that if there is an issue, it doesn't set them back when they're in the heart of their Super Bowl window. It can be that simple. It can have nothing to do with Dak, and it can be all about looking at the backup quarterback position specifically in a bubble and saying, what do we need to do there to be as good as we possibly can? Somebody's on the market. Does it make sense for everybody? I think the more surprising part about it is Andy Dalton's decision to go there. Not because I believe he was going to go to Jacksonville. I was clear in that. I thought he was going to go somewhere where he could be a backup in a great situation. But remember, Dak's never missed a game. So Andy Dalton goes somewhere as a backup where it is reasonable to think that, unlike Pittsburgh, where I thought he could have gone to been a backup should they have been interested in him, that he would have had the opportunity to play if there were any setbacks for Big Ben. This is all about Andy Dalton simply putting himself in a situation with the Cowboys where if he gets on the field, it's going to be great weapons for him. But this to me speaks to Andy Dalton choosing to take a path that's different than what many of us expected. First take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer gives you multiple quote options so you can pick what's right for you. See for yourself at progressive.com. We're asking you guys the greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport. So we want your take on it. Mark in Ohio, what do you got as the greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport?
I got the 2002 Ohio State Buckeyes for several reasons, and a lot of it was based off of what you said, which is what I was thinking, so I guess we think alike, which could be scary. But anyways, number one, the Buckeyes were not a preseason top five team. Number two, they did not have a dominant offense whatsoever. Their best player was a freshman running back in Claret. Number three, their defense was good. The defense was a top 10 defense. They were very good. But they remember, they removed their starting wide receiver and put him on a cornerback. And the main reason is they beat what everyone considered one of the greatest college football teams in the Miami Hurricanes in the championship, who, by the way, was dominant. They blew out everyone. Remember the year before, they destroyed Nebraska. They were dominant, and the Buckeyes went in and won. Yes, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear the referee and the calls and all of that, because there was bad calls both ways. But the Buckeyes did the main thing, which was the shock theory. They shocked the world and went. That was the first team to go 14-0. So there's why I choose the 2002 Buckeyes.
You know, I like a lot of that because they did have everything that we were looking for. I mean, it was unexpected with the run. There was a level of dominance. They go undefeated. I think, you know, expectations coming into the season set a lot of our way that we view that season looking back. So, you know, I like a lot of that. I got no problem with any of that as being one of the most dominant. Eric in Denver, we're getting a lot of tweets for one particular person. Eric, I think you're on the same page here. What's the greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport?
Jason, I'm talking the 1998 Winston Cup Championship with Jeff Gordon. This kid was coming off two out of the last three championships. He wins 13 out of 32 races, going against some of the best racers in NASCAR history. You're talking Dale Earnhardt, Rusty Wallace, Bill Elliott, Mark Martin. This kid dominated on his way to the three out of the last four championships. I'll tell you what, that's when I became a NASCAR fan.
Look, I'm the first to admit I didn't grow up around NASCAR. I don't have enough context with NASCAR. So when you start spouting it off, I'm buying in. I'm getting a lot of tweets for it. So obviously outside of my realm of expertise, but has to count. And it's a little like a Tiger in that sense. Like, we have to look at some individual. We've had some tweets supporting Serena as well. You got to look at some of these individual seasons, that weren't team based, but still had that level of dominance. By the way, Paul on Twitter says, can't get through on the line. So here's my take for the 2004 Red Sox, goes in and then gives the full take on why the Red Sox of 2004 were the most dominant team he's ever seen. Love it. I love the resourcefulness, too. Can't get through on the line, you tweet us instead. So all in on that. Tim in Florida, what do you have as the most dominant the greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport?
I'm going to go with a period of 4 years, the 1989 through 1992 North Carolina women's soccer team. They went 93-1-2. With four national championships and led by another GOAT from North Carolina in Mayhem.
I mean, that is that's an error I got no context on, so I'm going to have to take your word for it. Love it. I mean, we see this level of dominance. Does it matter to anybody? And next for your take on it, like, we've had some votes for Connecticut women's basketball too. Does it matter when you start thinking about the level of competition across the board on this? Because I'm not sure how that plays into some of the conversation. And college football fans galore trying to figure out, especially when you go back to the era pre-playoff, how do you judge a team? We've had some tweets, for example, supporting Utah in the year that they were undefeated but didn't get a chance to play for a national championship. So I don't know how we factor that in when you talk about greatest single season. Do you have to win a championship? Does that have to be assigned with it? Kevin in Alabama, what do you have as the greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport?
Yes, sir. I was going to say the 2010 Auburn Tigers with Cam Newton.
I mean, that was pretty spectacular. What stood out to you?
Well, just the fact of talent around them. You know, if you go back and look at the 2007 to 2009 season, it was very mediocre. And they go 14-0, and then 2 years later, they're 3-9. So I really feel like that he didn't have much NFL talent around him, and he still, you know, had one of the most dominant seasons ever.
I'll take the take. I think it's hard. I mean, the college football world is so hard because, again, you can go back to different eras of different levels of dominance and try and figure out what it means. I've had a few tweets come in recommending the 98 Tennessee team the year after Peyton Manning was there. You're talking about a Vols team that with T. Martin went in and won a national championship. We often forget that it was post-Peyton Manning that the Vols won that championship. Mr. Postman tweeted Iron Mike Tyson in 1986. I mean, you could post Tyson in any year and probably be right about it. I want more of your take. The greatest single season you've ever seen in any sport. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. In the meantime, it's opening day tomorrow in Korea. We'll talk to Jeff Passan next about ESPN broadcasting live KBO games. That's next. First, take your take on ESPN Radio. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. If you missed the first hour of today's show, go check it out on demand in the First Take Your Take podcast, brought to you by Capital One. With Capital One, you can open a new checkings or savings account with no fees or minimums. Welcome to banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Approval required. Capital One, N.A. member FDIC. All right, a little bit of reimagined here on broadcast. We all expected to be watching Major League Baseball. Well, we're not going to get to watch some baseball, but it won't be the baseball we're used to. It won't be the regular Major League Baseball we were all anticipating getting to watch, but it's at least something. It's the opportunity to sort of lay ourselves into the baseball world and feel good about things again. So ESPN is going to be broadcasting Korean baseball, the KBO, starting, it looks like, with six games a week. To get a breakdown of what to expect, I want to get some thoughts from ESPN Major League Baseball insider Jeff Passan. Jeff, what can baseball fans expect from the KBO broadcasts?
You know, if they're expecting major league quality baseball, I think there might be some disappointment. Because it's, you know, somebody who's in Korea right now said to me, I hope that it's not like English soccer fans if MLS were broadcast over there complaining, well, this is not the Premier League. Because, it's not. It is a high minor league level baseball that has major league caliber players in it and has quite a few minor league caliber players in it as well. But number one, Jason, it's baseball and it's sports and it's actually happening right now. And number two, it's like a really entertaining league. Not the least of which reason is the bat flips. And I am doing the work that I was put on this earth to do right now, and compiling a large number of Korean bat flip gifts at the moment. And I'm going to unleash that on the world probably when we get off the phone here. And it's going to be glorious. And I think it's going to get people really excited for Korean baseball, because I'm telling you, man, if you've never seen a Korean bat flip before, it is real and it is spectacular.
You had me at bat flip in general. You know me, I'm never one for, for old school. So I'm always going to take that all day, every day. Any differences in the game itself compared to Major League Baseball?
Yeah. You know, the velocity isn't close to where it is in the big leagues. You're going to see guys pitching, topping out probably mid 90s. You're going to see mostly high 80s, low 90s, a lot of junk ballers, and a lot of off-speed pitches. Until last year, it was interesting. They deadened the ball last year because, like, when Eric Thames, the now Washington Nationals first baseman, was over in Korea just putting up absolutely obscene numbers, you know, hitting .380, slugging .790. I don't know if the ball was juiced, but there was a lot going on there. So they deadened the ball this past year. Slugging percentage dipped under .400. It didn't quite look like the Korean baseball that I think people have become accustomed to. So it's going to be interesting to see how the ball plays, but it has historically been a very offense-friendly environment.
So we're talking to ESPN Major League Baseball insider Jeff Passan. Jeff, what can Major League Baseball take away from this return from South Korea?
It's tough to say at this point, Jason, because you have to recognize the reason that the Korea Baseball Organization is playing games at all right now is because they've done an incredible job of handling coronavirus. And that is for a number of reasons that would take a lot longer to get into than you have time or perhaps the audience has interest. But the point is, in the whole country, and I know it's 1/6 the population of the United States, but still a fairly populous country. In the entire country, within the last week, they've been under 10 new cases a day. 10 cases a day. So they've done an incredible job of maintaining their lives and their society amid this, and baseball coming back is just a part of that.
You guys can follow him on Twitter, at Jeff Passan. You got to do it right now if you want to get the bat flips. I cannot wait for it, Jeff. I can't wait to just have some baseball that we can actually talk about. So thanks for the time. Thanks for the insight, my friend. Hope you and yours are safe. Thanks for coming on with us.
By the way, I am going to be on the broadcast tonight. I think it's going to be like the third or fourth inning or so. They let me poke my head in, and I can't wait. So 1 o'clock a.m. Eastern, live sports, everyone.
Oh, this is great. Follow him on Twitter, at Jeff Passan. Passan, we appreciate the time. I'm going to be watching. I'll record it. I might be asleep, but I'll record it. Thanks for hanging out on First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News.